All right, welcome everyone to this Ryder Cup preview edition of Jay Flemma Sports Report. And it's going to be one heck of a Ryder Cup because it is being held at Bethpage Black, an absolute masterpiece of A.W. Tillinghast, a titan of American golf course architecture, and Bethpage being one of his indisputable masterpieces. Just 15 miles outside of New York City, in the town of Bethpage, in the state park, close to the towns of Forest Hills and Kew Gardens. For a very long time, Bethpage Black was in the doldrums. It was bunkers filled with stones and much smaller than they are right now, and an unkept golf course. But it was the masterful eye of two people, the USGA's David Fay and quintessential American golf course architect of our generation, Rees Jones. And he joins us here today to talk about all of the masterful renovations he's done and his not only renovation of Bethpage Black, but his catapulting the course from the doldrums to the pantheon of American great golf courses. So please give a warm welcome to Rees Jones.
Great to be here.
Rees, so, you know, you are beloved in New York City for rescuing their great public golf course and, you know, making it a major championship venue now both ways. It's hosted two U.S. Opens and one PGA championship. Walk us through the history of A.W. Tillinghast being hired and building Bethpage Black.
Well, Bethpage Black was the fourth golf course that A.W. Tillinghast built at Bethpage State Park. It was a make-work project during the Depression, built in the 1930s, really with labor just so they could make a living. And Tillinghast, really, as my father, Robert Trent Jones, did during that era, really almost donated his services because it was very important to both, to all architects at that time, to build something special. This was his opportunity to build his most magnificent championship golf course, and I think he achieved the goal.
Tell us a little bit about who were Tillinghast's favorite architects and influences, and what are some of the design features of Tilly that you'll see at the Black?
I think Mackenzie was probably the architect that Tillinghast probably emulated and really revered. You can see they both had really interesting bunkers, sort of windswept bunkers that had capes and noses and fingers. They also had used bunkers as a strategy. They also had shot options. So I think Mackenzie is the architect that Tillinghast emulated more than anybody.
So tell us about the build. It took place during the teeth of the Great Depression, and yet the Black was built and became an icon of New York City.
Well, the records have all been lost, and we don't know quite how it actually ultimately got built. A guy named Joseph Burback was the project supervisor. Tillinghast designs were the what he followed. On all three of the previous golf courses. And it was built slowly, which all great golf courses really are. And the routing, it has to be one of the best routings in championship golf. It's so natural. Every green site is a natural green site, a lot of elevated greens, a lot of really natural flow to the golf course. It's got a lot of movement. And that movement and that topography change really adds to the whole challenge and the fact that it's sort of stood the test of time for years.
So tell us about the sort of career arc of the course, how and why it sort of fell into disarray, and then the story of how the genesis of the idea to bring it back and not only restore it and renew it, renovate it, but also host major championships there.
Well, it's part of the New York park system. And I think that the New York State did not have an ample amount of money to keep maintaining all their golf facilities that they have. I designed one of them for at Montauk and Montauk Downs. When we came in there on May 1st, 1995, it was in terrible disrepair. And David Fay and 10 other people went to play it just to see if we could convert it into a U.S. Open venue. You walk through the bunkers, they weren't raked. You'd have a ball and a footstep was a foot deep. And I played with the USGA rules guy. I said, "Do I get a drop?" He said, "Absolutely not. You got to play it as it lies." Then there are trees growing in the bunkers. The grasses were all mottled. The greens were not very fast, and they had a lot of sort of invasive grasses in them. The fairway widths were irregular. The greens, the bunkers were in the wrong places. The fescue grass really had a lot of weeds in it. So we had a lot of work to do, but the USGA actually spent $3.5 million refurbishing the golf course, and that was the fee to the state that they received for allowing the USGA to have the US Open there.
So tell us a little bit about that day when you went around to test the golf course. Who did you play with, and what stood out to you most of all, in particular regarding the holes at Bethpage Black that could challenge the very best golfers?
I played it with Tom Meeks, who was the rules official at the time, and a couple of executive committee members of the USGA. That was 1995, and that year they had the U.S. Open at Shinnecock. So a guy from the Daily News saw David Fay and myself in the parking lot and wrote an article the next day that there must be something wrong with Shinnecock Hills, and they're probably going to move the U.S. Open to the Bethpage in a couple of months. How do you know? Well, I saw David Fay and Reese Jones in the parking lot. So that became the first rumor of many more, but most of the rumors came true. They were very good rumors.
Okay, so take us through that first round. Was that the first time you'd ever seen the black?
No, I played a lot of junior golf in the metropolitan area. I was from Montclair, New Jersey. So I played a junior tournament there when I was a kid. But at that time, I didn't really evaluate the golf courses. I just played them as they lay and tried to, I probably didn't play as well as I should, although I didn't know how hard it really was. So I was kind of lucky in that respect. And after that, I hadn't played much, but the New York State Open is held there. And so it always held up as a championship test. During the redo and before the redo, I played it a lot. And I was there about every week during the redo. And it's one of my most rewarding projects I've done.
Now, when you were speaking of some of the elevated greens, I also was enamored of the way Tillinghast benched some of those greens in particular. For example, the second hole, the way that it both curves like a scimitar yet rises through the trees, ascending to that wonderful green at the top of the hill. So walk us through some of the holes that in particular you were pointing out to Meeks and to the rest of the USGA team that you thought were the strongest, and also some of the things that you thought architecturally were the most interesting.
Well, it's a classic golf course because it used the lay of the land, and that's why Tillinghast saved this to be his fourth and ultimate golf course after he'd built the three previous golf courses that were really more playable. And at that time, because they didn't move much dirt, they didn't have earth moving equipment and bulldozers that we have today. You laid out the golf course to use the natural grade. So you have a lot of naturally elevated greens, like as you just pointed out, number two, number five, you have number 10, then you have 15, 18, a lot of very highly elevated greens, which really helps from a championship standpoint because it's harder for the good player to judge his shot when you have to take in wind, distance, and elevation. And the everyday player is more baffled by the elevation than he is the other two characteristics. So I think Tillinghast knew that, and he utilized, and then he graded those so they kind of pitched toward the fairway because in that day, They didn't have internal drainage in the greens, so they really pitched most of the greens back to the fairway. So it's a great golf course for the everyday player because he could hit a shot that released to the hole, and the good player could hit a shot that would stop at the hole. So it really provided a great challenge for every type of player.
So tell us about the renovation, Reese. You've got a wonderful book of your field notes that breaks down every single hole like a fraction. But walk us through what, in your mind, were the most fun parts of bringing Bethpage Black back to life.
Well, it was very exciting because we already, when we got to do it over in a couple of years after we first looked at it, we knew then that it was going to be the site for the U.S. Open. We did Torrey Pines or Congressional or Atlanta Athletic Club. We had to redo them to get them chosen. So we knew exactly what our approach was going to be. David Fabe and Dave Catalano, the park superintendent, all of us worked together. Greg Muirhead from my office was there with me every step of the way. We had a really good construction company, and we knew what we had to do just to make it a test and really maintain its status in the world of golf. And I think we actually did more than maintain its status. We elevated its status by the changes we made. And we restored the style, we restored the golf course, but at the same time, we lengthened it. We moved the bunkers where they're more appropriately located for today's play. We've refurbished all the greenside bunkers. We shrunk some greens. We expanded some greens. We really changed the fairway and rough lines. The bunkers were too far out. We had to bring them in so they were in play on 10, 11, 18, especially. So there's a lot of little things to do, but a lot of big things that we accomplished for the $3.5 million that the USGA allowed us to have.
So tell us a little bit about how successful the course has been at hosting a major event.
Well, I think it's been extremely successful, partly because there's several reasons. It's the first publicly owned golf course ever to host our national championship. Then it hosted a second one. And then the PGA of America took over and hosted a PGA championship there. And then to be chosen for the Ryder Cup was the ultimate achievement. And now we're going to have a KPMG Women's PGA Championship and another PGA Championship in the 2030s. So David Fays and my dream of really bringing a public golf course into the world of championship play and bringing all those public fans into being a part of it was really kind of what we achieved. And we're so happy that now it's going to continue on and on and on. And so I think we achieved our goal and really exceeded it.
And best of all, the price for the average fan to go and play the golf course, even during the summertime, is absolutely reasonable in comparison to, what you might pay, for example, over in the United Kingdom for an Open Championship venue, or what you might pay at a ritzier resort, that might go nameless, but you know the usual suspects that charge somewhere around $550 a round.
Well, part of the beauty of the whole project, and the same thing with Torrey Pines, both of them were chosen to play, have a U.S. Open play, but the city and the USGA in both cases really wanted to make sure that the price point would stay low. And in the agreements that were made by both Bethpage and Torrey Pines, they agreed to keep the price point lower for the everyday player. Because now these publicly owned golf courses, Jay, are so important for the entry-level player in America because golf is getting pretty expensive, even with the privately owned public golf courses. So to have these golf courses around the country is more important than ever.
It is. And the chance for people to be able to go and walk in the footsteps of history, you're not only gaining people that are playing the game. You're cementing people that will be members of this game for life. They're going to fall in love with it, and who knows, they may even dedicate their life to it. And Bethpage Black is quite the place to do that because so many homespun people have done really well there.
They have, and I think what I love about being involved so deeply with Bethpage is I have so many people that call me, so many people that talk to me. They talk about when they grew up and when they were kids, and what it meant to them. Just and for them to achieve a decent score at Bethpage Black, even though they played the other three courses probably a little better. I mean, even on opening day, and back in when we reopened the golf course, I shot 76, and I shot lower rounds than that. But that I was in a tournament, the President's Cup tournament, opening day. That may be the best championship, best tournament round I've ever had. I had 13 pars and 5 bogeys, and I bogeyed the last hole, which I'm still upset. I'm still upset about.
Okay, wait a minute. How
I hit
did you bogey 18? Let me guess,
him. I hit him in the left
double
bunker. I hit him in the left bunker.
bogey.
I still remember it.
One more question before we go to break. And when we come back from break, we're going to break down the golf course like a fraction. But as we turn towards the future, what other work do you see that might be getting done to the golf course after the Ryder Cup is over? Are you going to tinker? Are there any more ideas? What other little things need to get done, or what other changes have to go back since now the pros aren't going to be playing there and we're going to welcome back all the rest of the rank and file golfers?
Over the years, we've made a lot of changes since 2002 and 2009 and prior to the PGA Championship. And we've been working with Kerry Hague on various things. But to tell you the truth, now they're going to throttle back the ball, I believe. So we really don't have to move the features anywhere because they're really kind of they'll be properly located for the new ball and the implements of the game. I think. Bethpage Black is one of those golf courses that really isn't going to need any change because we've done so many things over the years and tweaked it here and there. And the greens have held up. They've been challenging yet receptive. So I think it's pretty much the way it is and will continue to be in the future for championship golf.
Yes, Bethpage Black always has had that combination, that devastating synergy of extreme length, excellent elevation change, and severe enough bunkering to really catch you, to make you tack your way around all day long. We've got Rees Jones on Jay Blum Sports Report. This is Golf NewsNet on iHeartRadio. We will be back right after this. All right, we're back. I am Jay Flemma. You're listening to Jay Flemma Sports Report on iHeartRadio. This is also Golf NewsNet, and we are talking with Rees Jones, quintessential American golf course architect emeritus. And he is the man who, along with David Fay and some of the other folks at the USGA, single-handedly rescued Bethpage Black from a level of obscurity to stratospheric success. Now a three-time major venue and now a Ryder Cup host. So Reese, let's break down the golf course like a fraction. I think that the first part that you have to analyze is holes 1 through 3.
You're right, because one is a sharp dogleg that we will not play as it normally is played because the stands are going to be on the existing tee. So Kerry Hague had us move the tee to the left. So now we'll be playing less of a dogleg and a little bit shorter than originally. So the players are going to either play safe to the left and not flirt with the trees. But I think the way they hit the ball now is far, they can fly those trees and get in front of the green. The green is, it has a very narrow neck. So they could easily go in the bunker if they get too close to the green, which they probably wouldn't mind because their bunker game is so good. So I think you're going to see a lot of players, especially in four ball, the first guy's going to go for it, depending on how he does. The other guy will either play it safe or go for it. And foursomes, I don't think they'll be going for it, but maybe it's really not an impossible shot for any of the players in the Ryder Cup.
How about the second hole? We already discussed that wonderful par four, not very long, but going uphill and curving awkwardly, doglegging in a tough place. What do you think the strategy is going to be for the golfers there?
I think they're going to lay up their layup off the tee. I don't think they're driver off the tee because they want to hit a full shot. They can't see the bottom of the flag because the green is so elevated and you really can't see the surface of the green. They want to avoid the rough on the right because it has an upslope to it and they'll have a side hill stance. So I think it's going to be very important that they're on the fairway. Also, the fairways at Bethpage are pretty firm and fast right now because there's been a drought here all summer. So we're expecting to have a little bit of rain, maybe 20% each day of the Ryder Cup, but that's not going to make any difference as far as the rollout is concerned. So I think they'll probably hit a shorter club to that fairway so they can have a full shot in, and there'll be a lot of birdies on that hole.
Now, I was puzzled to see that it looks like they're going to play the third hole a little shorter than expected. I read that it's going to play usually about 210, but can't that go as far back as 240?
It could, yeah. And the Ryder Cup is different from a stroke play championship. The Ryder Cup really is more of a birdie fest. The stroke play championship is a par struggle to some degree. So I think they'll set up the rough is going to be 2.5 inches. The rough around the green is going to be like 3.5 inches. Keegan doesn't want to over penalize his long hitters from taking the opportunity to hit it as long as they can down the fairway. Around the green, he doesn't want the ball to roll too far away from the intended target, so he wants the rough a little bit higher. So I think as we go through the golf course, a lot of these golf holes will be set up to favor the Americans.
Now comes my favorite stretch of the golf course, four, five, and six, that brilliant risk reward par five, followed by the amazing heroic par four with the tee shot over the bunker and around the trees, and then that second shot all the way all carry to the green. And then finally, the thrilling downhill approach at number six. Tell us what you foresee in that run.
Well, the fourth hole is a very famous golf hole, and it has the famous cross bunker that they call the Glacier Bunker. If anybody questions whether Tillinghast really designed the golf course, this hole tells you it really is a Tillinghast design because it had so many shot options for the player at the time that he designed it when they had balls that didn't go very far and the shafts weren't what they are today and the head was. But now, what's interesting about the fourth hole, it's one of the most dramatic holes you'll see. I mean, and we didn't lengthen it on purpose. We left it at 517, which is really a par four for the best players in the game. So the green pitches away. We took the bunker out from behind the green. So if they go for it, the ball will release and go farther away from the green. So there is a more of a risk to it. It's going to be a par four for the best players, and it's par five for the everyday player. Five is one of the great holes in golf. It's really known to be one of the best. It's really patterned after the 16th hole of Pine Valley. The trees on the left come into play. You just can't hit the drive left. You get blocked out by the trees. Again, it has one of those naturally elevated greens that is protected by three bunkers. It's got some very interesting contour to it. You have to flirt with the sandy waste area going on the right side, and you have to carry it past that. But you really have to favor, you have to fly over the sandy waste area to get to the fairway. You want to come in from the right side. Six is a hole that I think Tillinghast probably loved because there's so many choices. But now, for the US Open, we used to have the rough on the downslope after the 280 mark, but now it's fairway. So I think most of the players will go for it. I think, I guess, in four ball, maybe one player will go for it. If he gets in trouble, the other guy will lay up. Because at the top of the hill, before it starts to fall, it's bracketed by sand, so you can get a penalty, and it's 170 yards from there. If you hit down the hill, you've got nothing left. And this green is probably the smallest, most protected green on the golf course. So
Sure.
it's all about the drive on the sixth hole.
Well, yeah, those beautiful bunkers, though, also on either side of that green as well. That's one of my favorite holes visually.
Yeah, it really is.
So you foresee that the players might go low in that stretch?
They're gonna go low on four. They have a lot of birdies. They're gonna go for it in two. That's the way it has been in the championships. Five will be a par hole, and six will be a birdie hole. So yes, they'll go low.
7, 8, and 9, the next three holes. As I look at them, they're three completely different golf holes. Okay, you've got 7, which will play as a par four in the tournament, but a par five for regular golfers because it's so long, another par four over 500 yards. 8 features the only water hazard on the course, a 210-yard par three with a false front green that will be mowed so that anything that doesn't get up, it will roll back into the water. And then the very cool and quirky 9th. So walk us through that stretch, please.
Well, I think this is the beginning of why Bethpage is so great because, as you just pointed out, Bethpage has a common theme, but every hole has a different characteristic, and you just change pace because the topography allowed Tillinghast to change the pace, but really maintain his style and his green style. Now, on number 7. We converted that to a par four for the US Open. It's been a par four for every championship since then. And I said to David Fay, I said, the players are going to complain about it because the trees on the right will come into play because they don't want to play away from the trees because they don't have a longer shot in as a par four. If it was a par five, they would just bomb it down the left and either go for it or lay up short. But now the trees come into play. Most holes at Bethpage, one, the trees come into play. Now on 7 they come into play, but most holes they're just a frame. But in this case, they cannot hit it too far right and come into the streets because then they're going to probably make a bogey. So they'll complain about it. And I said, David, they're going to complain about this hole being a par four. He says, that's great because if they complain about this hole, they won't complain about the whole course.
Okay, now tell us a little bit about 8 and 9.
Eight, we had to absolutely bring back the lights. It had been shrunk. And again, I think a lot of the things that, as far as the size of the greens, as far as things that they didn't maintain, were all caused by the fact that it was changed during the Depression and Second World War when they hardly had any money to maintain it. And I think when they shrunk all these features and changed these features, they just kept them that way because they still had a full complement of players every day at Bethpage Black for the same price. So there's no reason for them to change anything until we came in and decided to have championship golf played on it. The eighth hole, we added a little more room on the front portion. There's like three different greens. It's the center portion, which is the easy part to hit. Then the back portion, the terrace was abandoned, as was a bunker behind it, abandoned. So we reestablished the back portion and the bunker. I think one day they'll have it in the front. One day they'll have it in the back, and I think several times they'll have it in the middle, and that's going to be a birdieable opportunity in the middle. The front, if they spin it too hard, it's going to go in the water because we shaved the bank in front and brought the water closer to the green. And then in the back, if they go over, they're going to definitely make a bogey because that's a hard recovery shot. Nine, we lengthened that hole substantially because we were able to buy land from the college, and we did that after the 2002 Open. We added another bunker on the left so that we had the pros. They have to flirt with that bunker and carry it because they get a 2 or 3 shot advantage if they go that route to the green because the right side of the bunker pitches to the right. And so if you hit down the right side, it doesn't go forward. It goes to the right and farther away from the green surface. So there's a real benefit to flirt with that fairway bunker because this green is a low profile green. It's hard to visualize. So it's going to be very helpful. You can't really see the surface that well because of the bunkering. So it's going to be very helpful to be closer to the surface. So again, the drive is very important on this hole, as it is on number 6.
Yeah, it definitely plays just a little bit different than the other par fours on the golf course. But again, it's got a bit of wonderful quirk to it. All right, now we come to the meat and potatoes, holes 10 through 14, the big brawny part of the golf course, followed by the lollipop.
Okay, well said. 10, 11, 12 is, well, I mean, 8, 9, depending how it's set up, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 are going to be the strength of the golf course to some degree. And 10, 11, 12 are really going to be our amen corner. 10 is over 500 yards. It's bracketed on both sides by bunkers. This is where Tillinghast must have decided to use up his whole fairway bunker budget, because he's got all kinds of sand areas right and left of 10 and right and left of 11. So,
Wonderful dunes, wonderful.
yeah, so it's sort of cut into like they're dunes like bunkers. And we moved them into the center line, and we've taken the fairway a little bit closer to the bunkers. So it's going to be important that they hit the fairway on this hole and on 11, because they don't want to be in the sand, especially on 10. It's a very elevated green. It's protected in the front with sand. There'll be a lot of players that can hit short and probably in there because they don't want to go long, because we have a closely mowed area behind the green, which we added. So if they go long, it's going to go pretty far away from the surface and be a much harder recovery than the frontal bunker. 11 is a shorter hole, but we've really fiddled with that green a lot with help of Kerry Hague. And then we added a back rear right pin position, which is a really good one, a little terrace back there. Since the PGA Championship, we've added another pin position behind the bunker that we added in 2001. And so there's all kinds of choices for Kerry Hague on this hole to make it demanding or easy, whatever you want. So it'll change on every given day. And 12 is the drive over the cross bunker that you just can't go right because it's a pinched situation there. We added a fairway bunker in 2002 on the right side, so there's very little percentage of going right, because then if you go too far right, you're in the rough, and you won't be able to spin the ball. And it's a long hole, but it really is not a hard green to access. It's a pretty open entrance green, but it's got a lot of good contour, so it's important to get near the pin on the approach shot.
And then give us your thoughts on the 14th as well.
Well, give me 13 first.
Okay, let's hit up 13.
13's par 5. Used to be a lot shorter. Had no bunker in the early years of the U.S. Open. We've added that bunker, and then we redid the bunker this time, extended it farther down the fairway, and moved it closer. Because the way they're hitting the ball now so far, it's over 600 yards, and I think Carey will probably be playing it back there. We added that tee over the years, so it plays as a real par 5. And they have to think of, there's a cross bunker short of the green, 30 yards short of the green. So if they hit the rough, they're going to have to flirt with that cross bunker. If they hit the fairway, they're going to get so much run out because the fairways are firm. So they really don't have to worry about that. So it's important they don't hit the bunker or the rough on their tee shots, so they don't have to deal with the cross bunker. And this is a low profile green that they really can't visualize the second shot because they can't see it. But they know the yardage. But I think you're going to see a lot of birdies here, but they cannot miss the fairway. 14 is the short par 3 that everybody loves because it's sort of the easiest hole of the golf course. Oh my goodness, a hole I might make par on. We've added a right rear pin position that's pretty good, a left little tongue, and we added a bunker on the left. The bunkers, it used to be three bunkers, but then we went back to the photos and found out it was one bunker, so we reestablished that bunker. But if they put the pin in the middle, you're going to see a lot of birdies. If they put the pin in the back right, you'll see birdies, but not as many. If they put the pin in the little tongue left, you won't see many birdies at all. So it can change character depending on how Kerry Hague sets it up.
I figure if you can play the stretch of 10 through 14, somewhere between even and one under, you've done well.
Absolutely. Well, 10 is going to get into their head. 11 is just very strategic, so they have to really think their way around that one, depending where the pin is. And then 12, they got to bomb it off the tee. So I mean, 10, just can't miss it right or left. 11, you got to be in good position to get to the hole, and 12, you got to bomb it. So it's three different holes, but they're good par fours.
And then finally, the finish, okay? And what a grand finish it is. A wonderful flourish. You've got the mighty 15th with its majestic ascent to that summit green. And then you have 16, parachuting down to the fairway, before playing to that green. And then the par three 17th, and then the strategic and very quirky, but quirky fun and definitely nervy 18th.
Yes, you're absolutely right. It's a very unique finish. The 15th is the hardest hole on the golf course because of the green and because it's the most elevated green of the natural elevated greens at Bethpage. It's a two-terrace green that has a lot of pitch in the front, so they won't use the front part of the green. But the contour is going to sort of be a protective element to the hole locations. They're going to have to fly it to the back, which means they have to flirt with a very small surface. If they hit it right, it goes down a tremendous slope. It'll be a very difficult recovery. It's going to be very difficult to recover from behind because the green pitches from back to front. So I think you're going to find a lot of shots in that front part of the green, and they're going to have uphill putts and really be getting out of town with a par. But it's the hole that probably gets into their head more than any hole on the golf course. 16, we moved the hole tee to the right because you really couldn't see the fairway when we were first in there. We widened the fairway, but and then we put all the two bunkers on the right side. So you have to play the left side. This is a position tee shot, a very essential position tee shot. You want to hit it left because if they have tucked the pin to the right behind these bunkers, it's very hard to access the hole location from the right. So if the pin is on the right, you have to, but it sets up off the tee to sort of fool you. And you kind of think you're hitting it in the right place, but it seems to go right more often than left. So you'll see a lot of shots missed in the rough on this hole, and they will not have an easy shot. But it is going to be what I call a swing hole. 17, they had abandoned the whole right side of the green. We reestablished that. It's really two greens in one, a higher terrace on the left, a lower terrace on the right. It's very shallow. We brought the bunkers in both on the back and the front. So you're going to see a lot of holes in the bunkers. Now, there are going to be stands on the back of 15. There'll be stands in the back. So they're not going to use the ultimate yardage on any of those holes. So they're more apt to hit 17 in regulation than they would if they played the true back tee, which is over 200 yards. But it's very important to hit the right section off the tee. And this is when the matches are going to be close. They haven't been decided. And this is when the muscles tighten. So I think you might see a few of these players hitting in the back bunker.
And that green kind of reminds me a little bit of the 17th green at Pebble.
It does. It has
Its shape.
it's shallow. It's
It's
an angle.
waist-weighted, angled strangely, yes.
And they can't read it because the bunker's kind of they can't see the surface, so they can't really read it very well. So. And that's when the muscles are going to be tightening, especially in match play. They want to hit the right section of the green, and they want to get it close to the pin, but it's going to be hard to access. 18 is a birdie hole. I think it's more of a birdie hole the way Keegan has set it up with the short rough. I think you're going to find most of the players able to bomb it off the tee. If the rough were higher, they might have played a shorter club off the tee and come in with a little bit longer. I shrunk that green by a third, added the bunker on the left. And it's naturally elevated. Again, this being the 18th hole, it'll play a little bit tougher just because of where it is in the match, if the match is still continuing. But there are really great birdie opportunities here. So what we've really gone through, Jay, is every hole has a little different nuance, a little bit different character. The greens, they say, are flat, but with the 14th of the stint meter, a lot of things are going to happen. They're not going to be able to read the greens very efficiently because they're not pronounced contours on a lot of the greens. So it's going to drive these guys a little crazy. I've watched some of the videos of people playing Bethpage. They miss a lot of putts on the high side. So we'll see what happens.
Whoever's saying that the greens are flat, that's not true at Bethpage. The book on Bethpage Black is six of flat, Six have got mild contour, and six have got serious contour, including the Mighty 15th.
Yes.
So there's wonderful variety there, just as there is both in terms of horizontal movement of the fairways and vertical movement in the earth. And the fact that Bethpage is so big, it's got wide fairways, it's got huge hills. It really is on a grand scale, a majestic scale, that it is able to get in a fist fight with the greatest golfers in the world. It'll be fun to see it set up a little bit more laid back, so that means we'll see some more birdies. Give us a prediction. Mine is USA 15, Europe 13. What's yours?
I'd like to see that. I'd like to see that score. I'd like it to be close right down to the wire. I redid Brookline. I redid Medina. Both of them hosted two of the most exciting Ryder Cups, won by both teams. I'd like to
And
see that.
both featuring a 10-6 comeback.
Yes, both were a huge comeback. I built that new green on number 17 at Brookline, and that's now one of the great greens of golf because Justin Leonard made a putt that he could never make again if he tried. So I want to see it close, and I think you're absolutely right. I think that the picking Keegan Bradley as a captain was a stroke of genius because he knows the little nuances. You can't learn that golf course by coming out and playing a couple practice rounds. He knows all the little subtleties of that golf course, and he knows the strategy of that golf course, and he's going to be able to partake that to his team, unlike what Luke Donald will be able to do, even though he's probably played it a few times in U.S. golf. But I think Keegan, knowing the golf course, is going to be very helpful. Plus, I think that the fan base and the fans, they're very proud of how boisterous they are. They're very proud of the reputation they have.
That's putting it mildly.
And I think they're not going to hold back, and they're going to be pro-American. So that's going to be the U.S. team's 13th player.
I think it's going to be a Sharknado. That's what's going to be facing the Europeans. It's not going to be a buzzsaw. It's going to be a tornado full of sharks. Did you happen to see that terrible movie by any chance?
What is that?
Sharknado, there really is a
No, I
thing.
haven't. No.
Oh, goodness. Don't put it on your list. Yeah. A tornado occurring over the ocean picks up sharks and then moves on land. And so the sharks and the tornado eat everybody. That's the movie. But anyway, well, we've got Rhys Jones here. Rhys, tell us, what are you working on now that's new? And what else can we go see of yours that you'd like us to check out?
Well, out in your area, I just redid Quintero and outside of Phoenix, Scottsdale, and it's always been the top ranked public golf course in Arizona. Now I think it's going to be one of the top ranked golf courses anywhere. Great owner, great run. It's in Peoria, Arizona, and we've just been refurbished, redid the bunkers, re-grassed the greens, and it's going to come back. It's been kind of a fun project. And we're doing a lot of projects in Florida, Addison Reserve, Boca Woods, Broken Sound, some more work at the preserve. We have a new project in Puerto Rico that's about to start. We're doing one in São Paulo, Brazil, that is almost completed. We have one in Costa Rica coming up. Then we have one in the state of New York that is going to be very, very special, a special piece of land. So it's kind of fun. Working on these projects and getting great clients and great land.
By the way, okay, I did get a chance before I moved out to Idaho to play your renovated monster course at Nkayamisha Lake.
Well, that's been a real pleasure. It took us a long time to get it started. That's part of the casino projects in the state of New York. We had to really working on the whole thing for a long time. It was a refurbishment of the old monster course that Jimmy DeMerrick and Jackie Burke had at the Concord Hotel, and now it's a Resorts International
And
property.
Joe Finger, don't forget Joe Finger.
Well, he would not want me to forget him. You're absolutely right. Don't forget Joe Finger, because He built some really good golf courses in his tenure. But it's been fun. And the reception, because it's one of those golf courses where Mother Nature really provided us with the canvas. It's not overly bunkered. We've got beautiful trees. We have the water that was there from the past. It all fits and again changes pace. And we've had great reviews on that golf course. And it's been a joy for Bryce Swanson and myself to see how much people enjoy it.
Well, Reese, I'm going to have you come visit me at Fours Gate sometime soon when I come back east. Thank you for coming on the show, and especially thank you for your wonderful insights into your masterful restoration of our beloved Bethpage Black.
Well, Bethpage is a gift to golf to the public golfer, and I think it will continue to host major championships because everybody, no matter how hard it is, it's hard but fair. You get the shot you deserve from the pros to the everyday player, and it doesn't matter what score the everyday player has. He just enjoys the opportunity to play it, and they wait in line for days to get to play it.
Oh,
And
yeah.
the pros have never complained about Bethpage. It's because they know what it is, and it really is a very, very fair but very difficult test. And I think that's what you're going to find for the Ryder Cup. But I think it is going to favor the U.S. Just because of Keegan's experience with it.
Well, congratulations on all your success, and thanks for coming on Jay Flemmis Sports Report.
Oh,
Everybody, we will see you after the Ryder Cup.
always a pleasure, Jay. Good to be with you. Thanks.